There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
It could be that it's in the coming days that we'll see the real impact of Title 42 lifting, because it's once the Border Patrol facilities, those processing centers get full, and then they release to the shelters get full, that we'll see more people sleeping on the street.
I've had them surround my house, bang on my doors, bang on my windows. I've had to run them off with a pistol in my hand.
These are by far the biggest numbers we have ever seen, some of the biggest lines of migrants I have ever seen, and we're also seeing the state of Texas act differently. We have never seen them physically block migrants from entering before, so a lot of firsts on this trip.
We have them close and hang on to a dream. On the boats and on the planes.
Yeah, that's the vibe.
Coming to America.
All at one time.
Never looking back again.
All right, so that's how we get started. Midday Mobile on this Friday. Phone number 343, same for the text line, 343-0106 for both. Plus, we have all kind of emails and talkback messages and ways to get in touch. But 343-0106 puts you and I together over the next couple hours of Midday Mobile on this Friday. Coming up, John Sharp from AL.com is going to join me. Also, a candidate for District 6. Kyle Callahan is going to join us as well. We'll talk with him in the second hour. Plus, yeah, it's a Friday. That means constitutional quiz on the way. Your chance coming up in the 1 o'clock hour to win fantastic prizes and get in the running for some cash money, all brought to you by L&S Heating and Air. We'll tell you more about that as we go through the show. But be ready. Like, at some point during the show, I'll say, hey, get on the phone line at 343-0106, and then you'll get in the phone line. Then we'll ask the constitutional quiz question, and you answer correctly. You win the fantastic prizes. All right, so the situation at the border obviously is beyond ramped up right now. This coming from Breitbart. John Binder writes, a number of migrants traveling to the United States-Mexico border in hopes of being released into the nation's interior. Profiled by CNN, said they were fleeing crime and looking to secure U.S. jobs, which neither is a valid claim for asylum, right? So those things are, I understand, I've talked about this before, and when you look at the what they're saying, maybe it could be a million people on the southern border waiting to get in. To the individuals and their desire to cross into the border, I understand it. And I think it, I'm not talking about the drug traffickers, and I'm talking about the regular folks that would risk everything to try to make a better life for themselves. I get it. Problem is, we got to have laws and borders. Right, so I get their plight. And interspersed with those well-meaning people, there are plenty of bad hombres and bad people aplenty. But the majority are folks that are trying to find a better life. Problem is, you have to have laws. But we have laws and borders, and we don't actually completely enforce those, or just selectively, right? So you come in and you're seeking asylum. What does that mean? It means, like, back in my home country, because of my political beliefs, this, that, or the other, the death squad's going to get me. Okay, United States, like, okay, well, come here. We'll protect you. We'll give you asylum. But needing asylum from crime and income. I mean, there's a lot of people in cities and towns across the country that if crime was a reason for asylum, they could demand asylum somewhere else in the United States. Goes on to say, as President Joe Biden's administration ends Title 42, the public health authority that has been used as a border control to remove close to 3 million illegal aliens from the border since mid-2020, hundreds of thousands of migrants are waiting in Mexico to rush the border. Their goal ultimately is to claim asylum and be subsequently released into the United States Interior through Biden's expansive catch-and-release network while awaiting their immigration hearings in the future. Now, we talked about this earlier in the week with AL1's Congressman Jerry Carl. He said the plan, the intel he was getting, is that the plan was to take people, as you had overflow amounts there on the border, they would put them in buses and take them to Catholic Social Services centers on I-10. East and west. So yeah. So he said, yes, those people could be coming here to our area as well. And then they're let off the bus and said, hey, go in there to Catholic Social Services. They'll do the processing. But they don't have to. You know what I'm saying? They get off the bus. They can go wherever they want. Further down the story, it says, this week, CNN profiled a number of migrants traveling through Mexico to get to the border in hopes of being released into the U.S. interior. Nearly all said they were fleeing crime and looking for jobs. Once again, it's not asylum. One migrant family, a 23-year-old Honduran man named Roberto, as well as his teenage sister and father, told CNN they were fleeing crime in their native country and wanted to find work in the United States. Another migrant from Venezuela told CNN he is fleeing violence as well as the country's poor economic condition. I mean, so that is not, that's the point. That is not asylum. Asylum is reserved for those who can prove they're being persecuted on the basis of race, religion, nationality, or political opinion. So, can't come through, but we're going to let them through, and then we're going to tell them, hey, come back and, you know, come back for your court date, right? And that happened, too, with a questioning of Secretary Mayorkas. They're saying, well, we're going to tell them to come back in 60 days. It's, you know, they'll come back for 60 days later to report in. And he was asked a question. He answered this way.
You said at the beginning that you prepared for this moment for almost 2 years. So why is part of that plan an honor system?
Oh, it is not an honor system. They are a subject of our apprehension efforts.
Okay, so it's not an honor system. They're subject to, well, but how are you going to go get them all? And this is what's happening on the board. And we have, and now we've gone back to Title 8 instead of Title 42. Still, it has the same kind of parameters for asylum, but it doesn't have the expediency of turning them around that 42 did. And here we go. All right, so that's how we get started on this Friday. And, of course, we'll watch this story as more from the borders, you know, pretty much a constant as we go through the news cycle over this last week. Also, I want to get into a couple bills that are moving in Montgomery. The you know, make sure you're 18 to watch porn bill. Also, the vaping, if no children to touch any kind of vaping device. And if they're caught with one, how that could turn out, we'll get into that as well. Oh, also, as we get started, too, read this story real quick. Termites, headline here is, we saw a bunch of termites last night. You know, if you make it through, you know, when I talked to Austin Key from Arrow, he comes on here and says, you know, turn out the lights. If you got lights on the house, close the window shades so the termites don't, yeah, they're attracted to the light. I mean, this would be a time during termite swarming season that it would be fantastic to have a bug zapper. Remember, we used to have a bug zapper when I was a kid. Think if you could have the light on there and just draw the termites into the bug zapper. But, sorry, I digress. A story here, headline from our friends at WKRG, says, termite swarms make their way to Mobile. And I guess I shouldn't pick on this, but, I mean, they're already here. The way the story, I mean, read this here. It said, termite swarms have made their way into Mobile County for the 2023 termite season. To me, that sounds like, adult, if you're listening, like spring break. Like, they've made their way into Mobile County for the 2023 termite season. They have like little termite t-shirts of like, yeah, termite season 2023. This is going to be great. Because, you know, they're already here, right? They just move around. There's not like a horde of locusts coming out of the prairies, making their way, devouring everything in front of them. I mean, they do devour everything in front of them as a person that has lived through the oh-so-fun thing of having termites eat in your house. But they're here, and they kind of jockey around. They're not coming, making their way into Mobile County for the 2023 termite season. Yeah. Mobile County Health Department said termites will not harm people. I don't know that you can go off and say that, because if you've been outside, like I was last night, maybe having a cocktail, right? And termites were falling from the lights in the cocktail, and you go and you take a drink of your drink, and next thing, you know, termite there with you. So, I mean, Mobile County Health Department, I would say, usually, they say they won't attack people. But it does say they can damage a home if a nest is formed. How about that? Well, write that down. Somebody write that down. It says most termites die from environmental conditions, like falling into a cocktail. Others die from being eaten by predators like birds, spiders, and other insects. And I would say bug zappers, too. So there you go. That's as we get started with the termites, just it was just interesting that it says the termite swarms are making their way to Mobile. Like we could put up a border wall and stop the termites. But we'd have to finish it. We'd have to finish that wall. But the termites are here. Oh, also later on the show, update on Trank. You know, we talked about Trank earlier in the week. This is because fentanyl's not enough. You got to add some octane booster to it. So we'll talk about the Trank drug and the scourge of people, like people getting zombified skin with it falling off. I mean, you're doing a drug that could just likely kill you the first shot, and then it makes your skin fall off. Get an update on that. And then, and John Sharp's going to join us. We'll talk about some Mobile and some Montgomery stuff with him in a little bit. But health department's out there. The headline I saw today, so you know what kind of summer to expect, right? Because we're getting, this is not long. Kids got a couple weeks left, 3 weeks left, 4 weeks left of school. Then they're out. What kind of summer is it going to be? It's going to be a monkeypox summer. The headline today, ask, is monkeypox back for summer? 2023, baby. Monkeypox summer that we're looking at. It says, and by the way, you can't call it monkeypox now. It's, according to a Washington Post story, it's mpox. Mpox. But it says maybe monkeypox, which has, you know, been kind of quiet. We've not had as much monkeypox news, but it says mpox, monkeypox, is going to be trending. It's what's hot for summer. It's what's trending. So be ready. If you're kind of define your summertime, it's going to be a monkeypox summer. So we've got that to look forward to as well. All right, come back. We'll grab calls and texts at 343-0106. Plus, Leanna can update us on if you're crossing the causeway today, Bayway, a sign to look. You can see one of my favorite of the family of FM Talk 106.5 dogs is going to be up in bright lights. We'll talk about that. Plus, I will see it because I'll be on my way with many of us to Fairhope for the Fairhope Rotary Steak Cook-Off. That starts at 6:30 tonight. Please stop by and visit with us. Details on the way. News is coming your way next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
You know, Tim on the text line suggested that my cocktail wasn't strong enough. But Tim, the termites were stunned. I don't know if they're by the time I ingested them, if they were dead, but they were fully stunned by the mix in there. All right, welcome back, Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. A lot of tunnel talk here. We may get back to tunnel talk in a while, but I mean, Jeff. I mean, what else could be said after Jeff took on the tunnel discussion here? Tusker said the termites make you dance weirdly. Okay, good. I'll use that as an excuse of why I'm a bad dancer, Tusker, so I will do that. Judy said possums eat termites. You know, Judy, I can't disagree, but possums eat about everything. I think it'd be interesting the things that a possum wouldn't eat. They pretty much eat what you got. What you got? Okay, I'm in. So I'm sure termites are part of that. So monkeypox summer, are they going to have Hey Hey, Where the Monkeys as their theme song? Right? Possible. I don't know. Let's see. Jerry says, monkey is now a racist term. That's what got Howard fired from Monday Night Football. You're conflating two things. What Gosell was saying back then was bigoted. Was right. What calling a disease because it comes from the animal monkey, they have to take me to the re-education camp for that one. But yeah, so there's just monkey. It's just the headline, I guess, that got my attention. It's like a monkeypox back for summer. Like it's some new people wearing board shorts again. It's like, yeah, that's going to be the new thing. We've got to have something. I mean, if we don't have, if COVID is not, you know, the hot subject for this summer, then they're going to have something, right? So maybe it's monkeypox. Oh, and this story, this is one that's not local, I mean, but it did get my attention. And I feel before we get into the meat of the show and we get John Sharp on with us. Did you see, there's a whole series here about this this war among rival biker gangs. Did you see? And it's not just that it's a war between biker gangs. It says it's a headline here: how a cold war between rival biker gangs on Cape Cod turned red hot. That's my point with this story. And I don't know if anybody else saw this today. If you did, then you help me react to this. It says a newly unsealed FBI search warrant reveals how a turf war between rival biker gangs in southern Massachusetts sparked a bloody 50-man street brawl, which resulted in several gang members being stabbed and bludgeoned. Okay, so it says here, a heavily redacted warrant, which was filed by an FBI task force officer and unsealed yesterday, details how the Hells Angels motorcycle gang and their supporters came to blow with rival club called the Pagans in May of 2020 over the latter's encroachment into their territory. Says both the Hells Angels and Pagans are well-established outlaw motorcycle gangs with a history of crimes across the country ranging from narcotics trafficking to racketeering. They also can't stand each other, harboring long-simmering feud that occasionally flares up into open violence. Okay, so there, I mean, this, it's biker gang wars, right? It's a thing. You know, and I mean, they're sorting out their own thing if they leave the innocent people out of it. Well, who, you know, it's their thing. But the story that leads up to it, it said, I mean, it's like, okay, so the Hells Angels have been neglecting, okay, they said, according to the warrant, tensions boiled over between gangs in April of 2022 as the Pagans, who are now new in the region, new biker gang there, opened up a chapter in Fall River. I guess you, I don't know if you have a clubhouse or whatever when you do that, but said the small city is located in southern Massachusetts coast near Rhode Island border in an area where the Hells Angels long held sway. But the Hells Angels had been neglecting the area of late. So they hadn't been servicing their customers, y'all, according to the warrant. And they'd allowed that chapter in the area to lie dormant for over a decade. That left room for the Pagans to expand. They quickly moved into nearby Fall River. Hells Angels, taking notice of the new encroachment, reestablished their presence in Cape Cod, putting up a sign outside their newly christened clubhouse, to announce their return. So the comedy of this to me is, you got this big biker gang brawl and you know, turf war going on in Cape Cod. I mean, if somebody's not sitting down writing a TV show about this, how biker gangs in Cape Cod, it's just a set, you know, you say biker gangs in Vegas, yeah, you know, Omaha, yeah. You get that, you know, in Atlanta, you get a Mobile, New Orleans, Shreveport, okay. Cape Cod? Like, where are you in the rankings of being tough biker gangs when you're doing your stuff in Cape Cod? I mean, do you get assigned there if you got in trouble somewhere else? And be like, listen, man, you've really caused us a lot of trouble. You're going back to the minor leagues. You're going to run the Hells Angels in Cape Cod. You have a cute little house. It's going to be, and you'll run it right out of there. So there you go. It's the update. I just, headlines that have got my attention. Oh, now we got the local. Listen, it's here. Is people are talking about biker gangs here? That's fine. You could expect that, but Cape Cod. Don says, "Hey, Sean, tell everybody to call Arrow. We have the solution to termite swarm problems. We can get rid of them." Absolutely, Don. That's the people I use, and I've had to before. You know, Dalton and I were talking about it during the break, and I don't want this to turn completely into termite chat, but you know. And I was just kind of laughing about the thing that came out, the story that the swarms are moving towards Mobile. I pulled in one night, hit the garage door opener. Here goes, bang, here comes the garage door up. And, you know, the light comes on in the garage and all that. And it's like, I don't know, I'll try to be conservative, about 80 million termites in my garage. That was not it's not where the better afternoons or evenings coming home. All right, this one says, come on, man, the Foley 7 in 2013 should have woken everyone in 2013, a cartel franchise, no wives or girlfriends were deported. Some of those guys are probably out early. David says, biker gangs in Cape Cod. I can see that. Okay, that's what I was talking about. I can see it now. A Netflix show, businessman by day, BA biker by night. I'm just telling you, it's not any surprise about the Hells Angels and the Pagans fighting it out. That's like, it's just it. It's happening on Cape Cod. Like, just as the settings of places for biker gang battles to go down, Cape Cod seemed surprising. King of all unnamed texters said, I bet they won't encroach on the Provincetown chapter. That's right. Some tough ones over there.
It's Sean Sullivan. Join Mike Ward and me every Saturday morning at 7 for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, bringing you inshore, offshore, and freshwater fishing reports from some of the area's best guides, plus hunting talk, conservation news, habitat management, and the latest in state and federal regulations. So join the conversation Saturday mornings at 7. Plus, you can listen after the hunt or fishing trip with our podcast on FMTalk1065.com. It's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, outdoors for South Alabama by people that hunt and fish right here in South Alabama.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
12:35 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. I appreciate the sidebar discussion we have going on the Ascension Technologies text line at 343-0106 with the Bikers of Cape Cod story. Marty said, yes, Sean, the Cape Cod chapter of the Hells Angels are totally in control of the Old Bay seasoning market. It's a lot more profitable than crystal meth, fentanyl, and prostitution. Blood will spill, Sean. Blood will spill. Yeah, the fact that the Hells Angels and the pagans were in this big brawl, that's not, unless it happened here or something, doesn't seem newsworthy. But just I read through the story and they said, yeah, on Cape Cod. I'm like, really? Okay. It's of some interest to me. It just, the book doesn't match its cover. Let's talk to my buddy John Sharp from AL.com. Lots to talk about with him. John, that story there, that's the one we should have been hitting on, that the bikers of Cape Cod.
That sounds fascinating, but I'm not sure on the local angle, but I'm sure there's one somewhere.
I mean, it's just, if you put a setting for a Hells Angels pagan fight, there's a lot of places I'd have picked before to set it than Cape Cod.
Right. Definitely. I agree. You can make the argument for down here.
Yeah. Oh, but, absolutely. Yeah. If it happens here, it's not. Yeah.
Cape Cod doesn't mesh well. There's more to the story. I'd have to know more about that.
Okay. I'll send you a link. It's something to read through all this. It's something. A lot to talk about here at home. And, of course, Tuesday's vote. And it finally happened, John. I mean, how many times have you and I talked about the questions surrounding annexation and the vote and the politics behind it and the no votes and the down votes and the tabling and it happened?
I agree. Does that mean, gambling's on horizon in Montgomery?
No, no chance.
That probably doesn't mean the case. But we do have, in Mobile, we accomplished hurdling over one issue that had been stalled for a while, and that's this annexation vote, but it's only one step, and I think a lot of people are realizing that now. Even though the city council voted 6-0 on Tuesday unanimously, it just kind of brings you to the next step, which is the public needs to vote, and that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, you say in your story, I'm always interested in the what's next, and you say plenty of logistical questions remain, including when the actual election will take place. So walk us through this. So the city council votes, and then we'll do like the old cartoon with the bill on Capitol Hill. Where does it go next?
Yeah, exactly. We are now in the hands of this is going to be in the hands of Mobile County Probate Judge Don Davis real soon. My understanding is he was out of town at a conference this week, so I'm not sure if he's back yet or not. But when he is back, he will receive this resolution from the city council, and that triggers a particular time period in which he has to set an election date. My understanding is it's only about 10 days. Once he gets that resolution, he has 10 days to call for the election. And then that election has to occur, according to Jim Barber, no less than 20 days and no more than 40 days from that point. So you have a tight time window there. It's coming, but we just don't know when. We don't have a date yet. So it's hard to begin, for the city's perspective, hard to send out postcards that they would like, informative postcards saying, here's what's going on this particular day, the reason why we're having this special election, the who, what, when, where, and whys. And then it's also difficult for the various campaign organizations to get out there and make their case as well. So we still need to get an election date. We hope to get that solidified next week. And also from there, then we have, we don't know exactly yet where the polling sites are going to be. It's not every day you have a large-scale annexation vote. I know there's been annexation votes in the past, and that's been mentioned to me in regards to this, but it's not every day you get an annexation vote that could affect, well over 25,000 people. So this is, there's some logistical issues that are fairly new or newish, and that the probate court or the probate the probate judge's election office is going to have to address. And they'll be working, of course, with the city of Mobile. The city of Mobile is paying for this election, so we don't, again, we don't know how much that's going to cost either. And there's also another factor is holidays. You have Independence Day coming up. Certainly, I don't think you want to set an election around that. And then you also have an issue of the July 25th special election for the District 6 City Council seat, mm-hmm. in which the special election for annexation will not be held on that date either.
Okay, that was my question. You know, could they line them up, but it's not going to happen on the same day?
Right.
Okay.
Again, different voting blocks, different right. voters, and potential for confusion there. So those were the things that were cited to me as the reason why they would not do it on the same date. So that's where we're at. We don't know yet. Then you have back to school issues.
There's
some questions coming up.
Yeah, I mean, you point out, okay, we already have, I mean, we could look back to the last municipal, we already have anemic turnout levels in the city for voting. And then we look at the fact that, you know, when those come in August, at least August is this month that it's summer for sure, you know, the hottest of the months, but it's kind of get back to reality, right? There are people back in kind of a normal schedule. You look at June and July, like you pointed out in your story, summer vacations, holidays, all that stuff. You may have a Trump. I mean, I don't know what turnout's going to look like because it's already kind of weak in a municipal setting. But when things do fall in August, I think it's a little bit better because people are more in like think a normal schedule. Maybe 8 or 9 people show up to vote. I mean, if you hold this thing in July.
Yeah, I think your concerns are correct, and it makes me wonder about this District 6 special election. I mean, it just is the timing in regards to when Scott Jones resigned and where we're at right now with that. You're talking about the July 25th special election to fill a city council seat. It'll be interesting. That really boils down to which candidate can get their supporters out the most. That's what that election's all about. But yeah, on the special election, I would anticipate, it's hard to say right now, you're right, I would anticipate anemic turnout, but there's a lot of interest in it. You're going to have some campaigning involved, I'm sure, so that might generate some interest. And special elections sometimes can surprise us on the local level. We've seen that on school referendums before. So, and given that this has been an issue that's been out there since 2019 and supporters have not backed away from it, probably before 2019, but that's when, you know, the last annexation was killed in the city council, it would not surprise me to see that, there'll be some heightened interest on this, even if we're in the middle of summer breaks and back to school and that sort of thing. Again, a lot of it's speculation because we don't know when the election's going to be.
Well
said. Once we get that election date, we can sit there and say, well, you know, we can really strategize when it comes to how we feel the turnout might be on that.
Hey, talking with my friend John Sharp from AL.com. John, you know, you talk about the vote as well, and you and I have been talking about this a long time. Were you surprised by, I mean, even though it's one less than normal number of city councilors, a unanimous vote? I mean, it's, in the old days, it would have been beyond shocking.
Right, correct. It led me to wonder why they didn't employ a third-party independent analysis back in 2019, bring up PFM study group's research. If that's all it took to get the unanimous vote, that's probably something that, you know, in hindsight should have been done in 2019. But, yeah, somewhat surprised, although I kind of sense this is where it was going leading up to the vote. The PFM group's report was a big factor in getting everybody on board because it put some numbers, it crunched some numbers, put it out there, and the council members who accepted that report took it seriously, took those numbers seriously, and they looked at it and they said, well, this is, you know, revenue positive for the city. We want to move in this direction while also maintaining, albeit a slight, voting age population majority-minority situation for the city. That's going to be an issue, though, that could be looked at also as we go forward with this special election, because there were 4 resolutions that were voted on, and each of them setting up 4 different special elections in different areas west of the city limits. And so what if one area, you know, votes on it and another area doesn't? Then could you distort the voting age population mm-hmm. percentages in the city of Mobile going forward, and then how would that be accepted by some of these watchdog groups that, you know, you could potentially see, you know, would we see a lawsuit? I, you know, a lot of what ifs. But those are things to keep an eye on as we go forward.
Hey, John, and another story I want to point people to over at AL.com. I started thinking about this, and I don't know the actual start of the film tax incentives here in Alabama, but I remember a lot of chat about it. I was in a couple movies, I think, because they were here, you know, because of the film tax incentives. And you now say Alabama's not going to increase the film tax incentive to compete with our neighbor in Georgia and neighborhood with Louisiana.
So, yeah, this was interesting. There was a bill that was introduced in the legislature earlier this month, House Bill 429. And what it basically, the meat of it, what it did was increase the cap and the amount of credits that can be issued each year to bring in movie producers, film producers, and so on and so forth. We currently are at $20 million. This bill would have gradually increased that to $65 million at the end of fiscal year 2024, then up to $110 million, and then eventually up to $150 million by the end of fiscal year 2026. Why that matters to advocates is because in Georgia there is no cap, and as a result, they spend a lot of money, there's a lot of tax money going out to providing incentives to bring in these big-time movie producers to film blockbuster productions that, you know, Black Panther is one movie, Spider-Man, those type of movies being filmed in Atlanta. And then in Louisiana, you have a cap at $150 million, and they've had a pretty, you know, there's been a little bit more of a debate over there on whether or not they want to continue, how they want to continue with their program going forward. Each state has a different, each state that has a film tax incentive has a different program, and it can be kind of complicated to describe how each one's different. But I think everyone looks at kind of what Georgia, you know, because they have no cap, and they're able to bring in these large-scale productions. And this has been Georgia's been kind of a landing spot for years for a lot of productions. Forrest Gump was filmed in Georgia, right. And that was, Greenville, Alabama. I mean, you know, so, you know, it's kind of like they're stealing Alabama's thunder and that sort of thing. But the film tax incentive in Alabama has been in place since 2009, and it has been effective from the fact that there's been more films that have been made in Alabama as a result. It's a credit that film producers seek in order to offset their costs. And Mobile's also hosted, remember Nicolas Cage is here 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
He's produced several films here as a result of this tax credit. And so there's a debate going on right now with convention visitor bureau groups in the state, tourism groups, on increasing that cap. But where the legislature's at right now is they said, we've done the most we want to do this year, and that was increase or extend the Jobs Act and the Growing Alabama Tax Credit programs, which are beneficial to luring larger manufacturing companies to the state, which, you know, by extension, the viewpoint is they bring a lot of jobs. So those were kind of the priority tax credit programs that the governor's office and the state legislature wanted to focus on, not so much the film tax credit this session. So this past week, I think it was on Tuesday, there was a debate on whether or not to increase that tax credit. And right now, you know, it's on hold. But the lawmakers who made comments said that, we'd like to revisit this because it is important to generating, more film producers to Alabama, and also a little bit of cachet to the communities in which you're having these film productions in.
You know, it's interesting that the arguments made, the debate around the incentive package and the game plan being raised here in Alabama is we had to compete with other states, right? They were making that on the I guess, non-movie business side of it. And then you turn around and then you look at the movie side and they're not going to extend the cap. You know, it's like, right. You just made the argument that we need to do that.
Yeah, you're correct. And not for this year. I mean, this could come back up next year. I anticipate it coming back next year. Representative Jamie Keel, who's a Republican in the House, he made the comment, I anticipate this coming back. He had Representative Terry Collins, in the House, he had a good number of Republicans and Democrats saying that they feel that, they support this. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't think this goes away. This is, sometimes in Montgomery things move slowly, mm-hmm. and this is one of those situations that is moving slowly as far as increasing this tax credit. Now, on the other side of things is that the size of a movie that's produced It has to be fairly large in order to be eligible for a tax credit in Alabama. In nearby Mississippi, these small-time movie producers, I think that the minimum is much lower. And the caps are both at $20 million. I know this gets kind of complicated, but Mississippi is a little bit more open to the smaller producers that come in and do film work in their state. And I think there's some producers here in Alabama that would like to see the same thing discussed here. So that could be another issue that's brought up. I think there might be a more holistic, comprehensive look at this particular tax credit in the future to see how it would, how it looks going forward compared to other states and how it works for Alabama.
John's stories, of course, you can get over at AL.com, but if they want to find you specifically and directly, how do they do that online?
I'm on Twitter at JohnSharp99.
All right, John, as always, I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Sean, thanks.
All right, there he is, John Sharp from AL.com. Check those stories out, that film credit thing. And many times we talk about film stories here, and we're talking about it because of the business of making films. I mean, of course, it's just we're great actors around here. They want to hire us as, come in and just be extras, but maybe it has something to do with the money. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:54, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Friday style. Glad to have you along. Say hello to my buddy, David McCrary, at LCM Motor Cars, where another fresh piece of inventory he has to tell us about. Hey, David.
Hey, good afternoon, Sean. We just got in a Lincoln Navigator. There's a trade-in at a local dealership. It's a 2017. It's got 110,000 miles on it, and it is a nice truck. We're supposed to send it to detail just to get it perfect. But it's that's the freshest and the newest piece. And you don't see a whole lot of Lincoln Navigators for sale. You see a lot of Yukons, Tahoes, and Suburbans or whatnot. But this is the luxury of the SUVs.
Right. I know folks that love Lincolns. I mean, they love Lincolns. They'll get Lincoln whatever.
Right. And you still get it's Ford. It's built by Ford. So you still get the good reliability of the Ford vehicles.
But you get the posh, right? The plushness.
It's got the posh, buddy. It's like a bungalow that's checked out.
But tell folks how to come check out that vehicle and all the other inventory at LCM.
Well, put on your trousers. We're in Theodore. We're at Highway 90 and Plantation out in Theodore. We're 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. Give us a call, 251-375-0068. Or go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com. We will have pictures of this Lincoln online Monday, but if you want to come by and see it in person today, or we'll take you to the detail shop, let you look at it there if it's already gone.
Good stuff. Thanks, David.
Have a good weekend.
You too. David McCrary checking in from LCM Motor Cars. Okay, I guess I could explain a little bit. There were two. So that's David. Is David messing with me? Because there's words that I think are very funny. It's been a holdover since I was a ute. And he knows him. He tries it. So what he's doing there. So the word bungalow makes me laugh. And I'm at 50 years old. You think I would overcome that? But bungalow and trousers. Those two. I don't know. Those two words have been favorites of mine. That's why he worked. Thank you, David. Thank you for working that into the conversation. We appreciate it. All right. To the Ascension Technologies text line here. Let's see. Oh, okay, more talk about the Bankhead getting hit. Which, by the way, we still have our trusty sign in here from our friends at the Nutria Rodeo. We have the, you go on our social media sites, you'll see it, or I can take a picture and pop it up on Twitter here. But it's from Nutria Rodeo, local craftsmen and women of T-shirts and hats and all kind of good stuff. But it's a erasable sign, dry erase sign. It says the Bankhead Tunnel. And then it's got a place where you can write in with the dry erase marker. How many days since the last accident? We're back to zero on our sign here in the studio. We could go back. If you just want to get in a big discussion about that, here's a plan. Because if you heard Jeff Poor's show earlier today, he about had a come apart on the discussion of the Bankhead Tunnel and trucks hitting it. He will be, I have confirmed, he will be with us tonight in Fairhope. We're coming your way, Fairhope. Fairhope Rotary Club Steak Cook-Off tonight. We'll have our booth there. We're not cooking steak, but we do have cookies from Chicken Salad Chick. Big thank you to them to hand out some FM Talk 106.5 goodies. And Jeff will be there. And then you could go, like, in first person, instead of just on the radio, come up and ask him something about the truck hitting the Bankhead Tunnel today. And then I can sit back in the chair and enjoy the meltdown. And it would entertain me for a Friday night. So I need you. I'm leaning on y'all to come out tonight and engage Jeff in a conversation about the Bankhead Tunnel during the Fairhope State Cook-Off. Starts at, I think, 6:30 tonight. So we'll see you there. All right, coming right back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile is on the way. Remember, we have Constitutional Quiz coming your way next hour as well. Your chance to win fantastic prizes. And cash money, too. But fantastic prizes. That's why you're here. We'll tell you more about that coming up. Plus, candidate for District 6, Mobile City Council, Kyle Callahan, joins us as well. News is next.